Okay, so now we're looking at church government and how the church can and should function as a theocracy. In other words, a theocracy that God is in charge. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. God should be in charge. The three different forms that have developed over history and with scriptural basis, Episcopalian, Presbyterian, Congregational, and each of those forms of church government have their varieties within them and the mixtures of them. And each of those come with warnings, the difficulties of the Episcopalian when there's, the hierarchy, then the rule oligarchy by a few, and then congregational, more of a democratic form. Each of those have their own warnings noted with them. And then we talked a little bit about the fact that the elder, overseer, bishop, pastor, same office, same person, synonymous terms. And now what we're going to do is we're going to jump into what the Old Testament describes as Israel was a theocracy. God ruled through a man named Moses. So we're going to just look at a little bit of a description of God in charge in Israel in the Old Testament. We're going to use that as an illustration. And then how 70 elders were appointed to help Moses. And we see Israel went from a theocracy to a monarchy in 1 Samuel chapter 8, 1 Samuel chapter 10. And we'll warn about the dangers there. Then we're going to move into the epistles, spend more time there as Jesus is the head of the church. And we'll conclude there. So let's go ahead and begin our section as church government described in the Old Testament. So we're going to look at this illustration, and we got to remember that, you know, this illustration is not precise because Israel is not the church and the church is not Israel. And there's a lot of distinctives between the two, but there are some commonalities. One commonality is they're both to be ruled by God or a theocracy. They're both God's people, and God is to be the ruler. God is in charge. And so we're going to look at this description of church government in the Old Testament in light of that commonality, because there's some things that don't cross-pollinate between Israel and the church, because the church is not Israel and Israel is not the church. We want to be clear on that. But there is some commonality. The commonality is that God is in charge of God's people. Exodus chapter 3, we'll begin there. And the Lord said, Exodus 3, 7, I surely have seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. I've heard their cry, for I know their sorrows. So I've come down to deliver them and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land. So kind of a story of God ruling over his people. He says, I have seen your oppression. I know your sorrows. I've come to deliver you. I'm going to bring you to a land that is abundant, a lot of provision. God's at work. God is in charge of his people. That's the picture. God looking upon the people of Israel. God heard their cry. God knows their sorrow. God's going to come and go to work in their lives. He's going to deliver them. He's going to bring them from that land of bondage. And I'm going to give you, he says, I'm going to go down, bring you a good and large land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And you know, I'm going to nurture you even with sweetness and pleasure in it. And it's God is the one doing all these things. Exodus chapter 15, then Moses, Exodus 15, verses 1 and 2. And then we'll look at Exodus 15, verse 17. Then Moses and the children of Israel sang a song to the Lord, and they spoke, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him, my father's God, and I will exalt him. So God working in charge, working on behalf of his people. Exodus 15:17, you will bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever. So clearly, a form of government that was a theocracy. God was in charge. God was owning, leading, providing, deciding. And how did he do that? Look at Exodus chapter 19. He appointed a leader like Moses, an instrument that God used as the leader of God's people. Exodus 19, beginning in verse 3, and Moses went up to God, and the Lord called him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice, and keep my covenant, then there shall be a special treasure to me. Then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for the earth is mine. The earth is the Lord's, and he's called his people to be a special treasure to him, and he's going to work specifically through them. Verse 6 and 7, he shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. So, bottom line, Exodus. We kind of marched through a few passages in Exodus, chapter 15, chapter 19. And it just kind of shows that God is in charge. God's reigning forever. Israel was operating as a theocracy. God implemented that among the people by calling out Moses to be his spokesman. Moses will come before the Lord, receive the word of the Lord, go minister the word of the Lord to the people, say to them, thus said the Lord has commanded us. So Israel, a theocracy, the Lord in charge. And how did he implement that rulership to a man like Moses and then later to Joshua? That's kind of the picture of how God governed Israel. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on. But just this is kind of a picture of God in charge. And he appointed a leader, a spokesperson, to speak to the people through him. So God in charge of Israel, but he had an appointed leader to speak to the leader, through the leader, to the people. Now let's take a look at Exodus 18. When the load becomes too heavy for Moses to bear, they appoint elders, 70 elders, to help with the daily judgment and oversight of the congregation. Exodus 18, 13 and following. And so it was on the next day that Moses sat to judge the people. The people stood before Moses from morning until evening. So when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did for the people, he said, what is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone? And all the people stand before you from morning till evening. And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. And when they have difficulty, they come to me and I judge between one and another, and I make known the statutes of God and his laws. So, you know, basically the counsel is you're going to get buried, you're going to burnt out, you can't do all this. Exodus 18, jumping down to verse 21, moreover, you shall select from all the people, able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. And so we'll pause right there. And so we see rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of tens. And I mean, you know, you could kind of correlate this and see this illustration in the New Testament, kind of body life. It was the body helping not just one ministering, but everybody pitching in to help, the Lord providing support for Moses and his leadership role. The duty of the elders was to support Moses in his leadership. Moses eventually had the tribe of Levi and the house of Aaron as help, as spiritual leaders of the people. So all these leaders, you know, worship leaders, assistant pastors, and so forth. But a sad day came, didn't it, when we get to 1 Samuel, when Israel changed from a theocracy to a monarchy. It was a sad day in Israel's history. And kind of a warning that we'll take as we go through these passages about church government. You know, they went in their thinking from theocracy to monarchy, a monarchy meaning a king ruling. 1 Samuel chapter 8, Israel wanting to go from a theocracy to a monarchy, like all the nations around them. It says in verse 4, 1 Samuel 8, then the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, look, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. So Samuel cited sort of this prophetic voice, a spokesperson for God, kind of as Moses had been long before Samuel. Now they're saying, you're old, your life and ministry about gone, your sons aren't walking in your ways, just sad all the way around. Here's a conclusion. Make us a king to judge over us, or to judge us like the nations around us. 1 Samuel, and I love 1 Samuel, chapter 8, verse 6 and 7. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge over us. And so Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they've rejected me, that I should not reign over them. And that was the issue. God was to reign over and rule the people of Israel. They wanted a king, and part of their judgment for that hard-heartedness is in turning from God. God said, give them a king. And sometimes God's judgment is to just give us what we ask for in error or in hard-heartedness or just what we want, and it's wrong, and God chastises his people in that sense at times, from time to time. 1 Samuel 10, 17 to 19. Then Samuel called the people together to the Lord at Mizpah, and he said to the children of Israel, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought up Israel out of Egypt, and I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of all the kingdoms of those who oppress you. But you have today rejected your God, who himself saved you from all your adversities and your tribulations. And you have said to him, no, set a king over us. Now, therefore, present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and your clans. So, sad day in Israel's history. They went from God ruling them, theocracy, to a monarchy, a king. They wanted to be like the nations all around them. So for Samuel 8, Israel wanting to go from a theocracy to a monarchy like the nations all around them. And that is a sad day in the nation history. 1 Samuel 10, and Samuel calls them together and says, go ahead. And that's what's happened often in our church, in the New Testament church, in the Church of Jesus Christ. Leadership in churches is too often pattern after leaders in the world, you know, how the government is run. And we learn from corporate organizations on how to run things. And that was a tragic day in the history of Israel when they do that. And it can happen the same kind of thing here in the church. And so if we're learning or copying from the world, what the world is doing and applying what we learn in the world to the church, and, you know, that can be a danger. So, kind of recapping, illustrated by Moses and Israel, just a great picture, God in charge, God selecting people through whom he wants to work, God even selecting a primary leader, a distinctive individual leader. He's not to be in charge, though. God is. Temptation and the danger is, and the misunderstanding is that he might think he's in charge. And so there's warnings in that. And so I've been around the Calvary Chapels for the last 20 years or so. And, you know, I'm not one of the initial early guys. I kind of came from the outside. I saw the Calvary Chapel. I like what I saw. And I became part of it. And it's like in my blood now. I'm just really, it's my family. And most of the pastors in the Calvary Chapels, like so many pastors that other settings in the church world, they're just simply servant-hearted leaders. And it's refreshing. Just servants. And Chuck passed on a servanthood mentality. I know that at the Bible College, that's where I learned servanthood. And it was a great thing. And I love how Pastor Chuck passed that on, both by example and in his teaching. And at the Bible College, we learned it. It was kind of ingrained in us. And I think that's the advantage of raising up men into ministry from within the church as disciples. You know, ministry is caught, not taught. They learn to serve their way into the ministry versus the seminary style, where you get into the trap of academically earning your way up or into the ministry. Church can too often become a ladder stepping on others to get up. And so I appreciate the foundation, the history of Calvary Chapel, to raise up men and women, ministry leaders, but men specifically into the pastoral roles because of calling, gifting, character to put them into the ministry, even without a seminary degree. And so I appreciate that. Those are the early years. They created a foundation for this Calvary Chapel movement. And it's given a lot of open doors for men and women in leadership positions, men in the pastoral ministry and women in every other leadership area that is biblical. And so, but the focus has always been on servanthood. Those are the ones, when you see the fruit in their lives, they're raised up. And all over the world, these ministers, missionaries, worship leaders, pastors, men and women doing the work of God, functioning in their role. And many are God's spokespersons. And God would help pastors and leaders, I pray, maintain in these days a humble heart under the authority and leadership of the chief shepherd. Because when man becomes in charge, it's just a mess. And so I love the history of what I learned and how I was raised up in the Calvary Chapels. It started with servanthood. I can give you some examples of that. You know, I served at the Bible College. I was a student there. And one area I served, I happened to be a mechanic when I arrived. And so I was in the mechanic shop. But, you know, when you're faithful in those things, I was fixing everybody's vehicle at the retreat center up there in Twin Peaks. People come up that mountain, their vehicles would overheat, and I would run down with my toolbox, and I'd meet them halfway down the mountain, and I'd get their car, limping it back up to the conference center, let them go to enjoy the conference while I pulled their car in the shop and repaired it. I repaired the fleet of vehicles there as well for the, you know, the conference center and the youth camp and so forth. And that's where I kind of started out, just as a servant. And the Lord showed me how to serve in that capacity. And, you know, as time went on, I graduated and I became a volunteer librarian. And I loved the library. Then that's when we moved down to Murrieta. And I enjoyed the library. I love books. And I was privileged, honored to be the guy that organized the books in the Dewey Decimal System, put the books away, repaired the books, checked the books out, checked the books back in, made sure that they were in order and that they were, you know, easily found, and I could find them for people and so forth and help people. So I learned in the library. The door opened up for me to become a full-time staff member and become the registrar. And then the door opened for me to begin teaching many classes, whether at Costa Mesa or there at the Bible College in Murrieta. And then I began guest speaking at churches, and the Lord opened the door for me to start an extension campus. And then that led to the extension campus students. We inadvertently, kind of, I like to say accidentally, even though it was God's sovereignty, we ended up planting a church, and I kind of switched hats, changed hats, kind of put the Bible College Extension campus. We still own that campus, but we pressed the pause button, and I began pastoring the church. And now we're moving into greater expansion with online education. So just interesting how all of that was a illustration of servanthood. Just that's how what I learned. I learned to serve, and God opened doors, and I stepped through them. Some doors, a lot of closed doors, a lot of warfare. Whenever there's a great effective door open, there's a lot of adversaries, and God uses those situations, and the enemy uses tools and even believers to kind of prevent the work that God wants to do. And there could be a lot of setbacks, steps back, but two steps forward, and all around the world. So I'm one example of thousands of ministers in the Calvary chapels. I arrived, no education, no degree. And well, I did have education, but not in anything to do with Christianity. And God raised me up. And I think it's just a beautiful thing. And I think that's the way God intends it to be. So wrapping it up, just simply, church government can be illustrated by Moses and Israel. Just a picture, and let's not misunderstand it and turn it into something bigger than it is. It's simply a illustration, and we're going to jump now and spend most of our time in the New Testament functioning as a theocracy. That's the critical issue here, is that where a democracy is the people rule. And that's a theory behind democracy anyway. All the people, they're the governing authority. A theocracy, however, God is ruling, and that's the issue for the church. That's just the big deal that we're trying to get to. What is the form of church government that I believe God has ordained in the New Testament? Is it a democracy where all rule, or an oligarchy where a few rule, or is it something else? I think it's a theocracy. God rules. I think that church government needs to function as a theocracy. God in charge, God ruling. That's what the church is. And we're just looking at a picture illustrated by Moses and Israel. We don't want to make it more than what that is. And we did look at the dangers that are inherent there. And but now let's apply this, you know, to Jesus, who is the head over right now the church age until the rapture. Jesus, the head over the church. And that's the picture we're going to look at. We're going to jump in now and spend most of our time in our next section, 1 Peter 5, 1 through 4, just to kind of give a conclusion to the Old Testament illustration of Moses, and then look at the New Testament. The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and witness the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you'll receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. I think a great, great picture of what we're supposed to see in the church.